Electric bicycles are my jam. I'm turning into a nut for a good e-bike. It's easy to get around, we save gas not driving our car for short trips to the store, and I'm getting a little extra exercise. The folks at Velotrick are sponsoring a series of videos on my channel to show off some affordable e-bikes and help people get up to speed. It's easier than you think, and prices have never been more competitive. You can catch those videos on my YouTube channel, but if you're interested in shopping an e-bike, head over to velotrick.bike/somegadgetguy and look at their road bikes and fat tires. Again, VELOTRIC.BIKE/somegadgetguy. VELOTRIC.BIKE/somegadgetguy. If any of those bikes look good to you, you can save an additional $60 off an already low price by using the coupon code SOMEGADGET60, SOMEGADGET60 at checkout. Once again, VELOTRIC.BIKE/somegadgetguy and coupon code SOMEGADGET60, and I thank Velotrick for being a sponsor on this show.
Okay, here we go. What you're listening to now started as an article, then was going to be a video, then a series of videos, but it just got too long to produce as some kind of video essay. My name is Juan Carlos Bagnell, aka Some Gadget Guy around the internet, and I'm an evil Samsung hater. I spend all my days attacking people who own Samsung devices, and I'm biased. I mean, and my tone is problematic. If you've stumbled onto my blog, my YouTube channel, or listened to a recent podcast, it might be a bit of a shock to hear my tone talking about companies like Samsung and Apple. I'm highly critical of those two companies, and I regularly pick at the most toxic members of their fan bases. One thing I haven't done a very good job of explaining is how I got here. I took a lot of this conversation for granted because of the way YouTube used to work. I came up on YouTube in a time where the algorithm promoted channels and hosts differently than individual topics. It was a lot different back then, and YouTube now seems to encourage producers to niche down aggressively, and it's harder to run a broad topic channel these days. If you talk about technology, the YouTube research tab will aggressively suggest you talk about the most popular tech topics. And we know that Samsung and Apple spend the most on advertising. So a creator's best chance of making money is to niche down from technology to mostly covering Samsung technology. YouTube wasn't always like this. The creator experience was a lot more open. It was really rewarding digging through comments and hosting conversations. I still imagine every one of my videos as the first post of a forum. My video is not the conclusion of a topic. I'm not rendering a verdict. I'm starting a conversation that hopefully others will enjoy and contribute to. YouTube has changed a lot over the years, and how I used to host topics and discussions now does something of a disservice to some of those conversations. If you watch a video of mine today, you're getting a late stage part of the conversation. You might not understand how much history I have with all of these companies. Every gadget I review, for me, it's like a chapter in a book of that company. My relationship with that brand. I've been writing chapters in my book of Samsung since the late days of Windows Mobile smartphones. That's a really long book that predates the launch of the iPhone. A very small number of readers and viewers have followed along through enough of those chapters to appreciate the journey I've been on with Samsung and their products. It's a lot of baggage to pack into every video of a new Samsung gadget. This podcast is going to be really long. It takes a long time to unpack and explain all the experiences and all the nuance of how someone goes from being a die-hard supporter of a company to becoming an insufferable critic of that company. I might record a similar podcast on Apple someday, but the overall story arc is pretty similar. Where I went from massive fanboy to hater over a longish period of time. You don't just wake up one day and say,
I'm gonna be a contrarian and hate this brand.
At least not with my backlog of content and videos and reviews. It's more a steady erosion over time until you hit a breaking point. I'm aware of my reputation. Whenever I'm brought up on social media, there's a rush to complain about my tone and act like I'm a professional wrestler of a tech reviewer. I'm putting on the act of playing the heel because that appeals to other haters, and that's how I'm grifting the tech audience. I can assure you, there is no good money in minimizing your coverage of Apple and Samsung on YouTube, criticizing the two largest players in North America. If you're interested in monetizing a YouTube channel, you can look at my channel as a recipe of what not to do. It's somewhat against the terms of service to dig into the specific metrics of a YouTube channel, and sometimes we hear of channel strikes for folks who show off too much proprietary YouTube data. I don't know how true that all might be, but I have enough issues with YouTube already. I don't need to test that hypothesis in this podcast. It should give us some concerns that YouTube and Google are so protective of that individual user data. If I, as a creator, want to show my viewers how this works and where I earn my money, that would be a way to reinforce a relationship and build trust with my audience. Those disclosures would help people understand my perspective on these products. I'm not entirely sure where the line is, but Google seems to be discouraging those kinds of disclosures between creators and audiences. As far as I feel comfortable taking that conversation, I will say I make more money per month on a small Patreon with a small number of followers than I do on a YouTube channel with 160,000 subscribers. Shameless plug, patreon.com/somegadgetguy. Otherwise, there is no benefit to rocking the boat. I'm cantankerous about these topics because mobile is my passion. Since my earliest days of playing with my parents' scientific calculators and then getting my own graphing calculators in high school, I got my first digital Rolodex in the fifth grade. It was a little Texas Instruments organizer with kilobytes of storage and a QWERTY keyboard. I was entranced with gadgets like the Nintendo Game Boy, and later, through the era of Compaq iPacs and Palm Treos, Blackberries and Symbians, all the way to today, now that we all carry monster powerful pocket computers. I think there's something so wonderfully democratizing about having that much compute power in everybody's pocket. This is the wave I want to ride. Today, I'm a fan of mobile. And I'm less a fan of specific mobile brands. To that end, it bothers me when good competition is ignored. It really bothers me when popular companies aren't properly and consistently criticized for their issues. Those two ideas together harm my hobby. That hurts the future of my favorite technology, and it allows for some pretty disgusting things to happen. Those issues that fly under the radar for most consumers. I think some of these ugly business practices would influence consumer spending habits if they received the appropriate attention and the appropriate ire from reviewers and journalists. But there's too much money at stake promoting the biggest companies. Reviewers and reporters are often too afraid to rock the boat or lose access to those manufacturers. I, as an entirely solo content creator and reviewer, I have corporate, professional, and personal reasons for why I'm so critical of Samsung these days. It's too much baggage to explain at the beginning of every Samsung video I might make, but now I can point people to this monstrosity of a podcast, and they can take this for whatever they might feel it's worth. That's my preamble. Now, here's the story of how a consumer electronics manufacturer broke a cranky geek's heart. Samsung can be a pretty scummy company. And that's where we're going to start. Treat your ears. One More's mission is to bring innovation, design, and quality to all music lovers, young or old, frugal or spendy. Offering an incredible collection of earbuds at all tiers of the market, cabled or Bluetooth, neckband or true wireless. Fantastic sound quality, top-tier tuning, excellent noise reduction. I've personally been a fan for a couple years now. Right now, my headphone of choice is the Dual Driver ANC Pro neckband. Great battery life, punchy dynamic sound, and
crazy good noise reduction in a very convenient just drop your earbud neckband design. Or you can get those same features and completely cut the cords with the dual driver ANC True Wireless, one of the absolute best options in the completely cable-free space. There's a whole collection of great audio options for you to shop at affordable prices. And for listeners of this podcast, I can also do you one better. If you shop at onemore.com, use promo code SOMEGADGETGUY10 at checkout. Once again, SOMEGADGETGUY10 with no spaces. You'll save an additional 10% over their already competitive prices. One More brings style, premium audio quality, and cool tech features to the table at prices that won't hurt the wallet. You can check out these multiple award-winning audio solutions at onemore.com. And remember to use promo code SOMEGADGETGUY10 at checkout to save some scratch. Now, let's get on with the show.
Part 1. Samsung's history of hype, cheating, and intellectual property theft. You don't become a global force by playing fair. At the heart of my frustration is always the disconnect between marketing and reality. How does a company promote itself? I think that matters. What claims does the company make about their products? I think those claims matter. And when companies overpromise and underdeliver, we should take them to task for misrepresenting their products. Legally, we acknowledge inaccurate advertisements harm consumers. We have a legal process for penalizing false advertising. Beyond that, we should be highly skeptical of any company that serves numerous lawsuits and harms competition through lawsuits, while also operating as an intellectual property thief. With a company as large as Samsung, if they're caught stealing another company's technology, they can stall legal proceedings or countersue to destroy their opponents in court. To begin at the beginning, or at least my personal beginnings, my first serious experience with Android wasn't with a G1 or a Moto Droid, but a Galaxy S. Specifically, the Sprint version of the Galaxy S, which had this awesome slider keyboard. After years of using Windows phones, I was blown away by the performance and the OLED screen, the fluidity of the UI, the touchscreen, and the features of this phone. Minus Sprint's awful first try at 4G WiMAX radios. That wasn't great, but the rest of the phone was awesome. The Samsung Galaxy Epic started me on a journey. For years, I would rarely stray far from Samsung unless we saw something special or novel. My brief flirtations with HTC phones, I still have a love for Windows phones, especially Nokias, but I would often find myself coming back to Galaxy devices. This peaked for me with the Note 4 in 2014. I made fun of the original Galaxy Note just like everyone else did back then, but by the Note 2, I was solidly on board the phablet experience. I greatly appreciated the stylus input. It's really cute how we used to think those phones were just so humongous, and now we take that screen size for granted. Over the years, I also gushed over Samsung Rugby and Galaxy Active devices. The purpose-built productivity and rugged Samsung phones were the best targeted solutions the market has maybe ever seen.
After I was done freezing it into a block of ice, I pulled it out, rinsed it off, and in gripping the phone, I heard this, which sent me into a panic because it meant that I had frozen the phone without completely sealing the back. I instantly powered it off. I ripped off the back. I took out the battery. The moisture indicator was red. So technically, this phone is now water damaged. And there was water on the inside of the device by the battery and by the camera mechanism. But after I let it dry out for about an hour, I put everything back together. I powered it up. And as you can see, the phone is still with us today. The SIM card is still active. The cell radio still works. Wi-Fi still works. So I'm not going to recommend that you ever do that with your Rugby Pro, but I am very impressed in even not using the device the way that it's supposed to be used. The phone managed to survive fairly well.
I don't feel like I'm exaggerating here. Those phones targeted a certain group of consumers better than nearly any other product made today. I still think Samsung is at their best when competing with futuristic features and they're building those devices for very specific demographics. It's that overall window, from Galaxy S1 up to around the Galaxy Note 5, where I was probably at my worst for being a die-hard Samsung Knight. At that time, I was critical and a little dismissive of the numerous lawsuits surrounding the company. I'd bring them up, I'd try to cover them where appropriate on my blog, but often I'd still come back to a conclusion on really what would benefit me personally. Does it really matter as much if Samsung is ripping off intellectual property? Steve Jobs used to joke about great artists stealing. Those were lazy whataboutism arguments. Now, today, with a little hindsight, I believe that matters. I don't think it's a compelling argument if you're criticizing one company and trying to divert blame by saying other companies do bad things too. We should still criticize the first company for doing something bad. We should criticize all the companies for doing something bad. But back then, in my overeager tech excitement, I'd mention the criticisms and then hand-wave them away if it meant I got a better, flashier Samsung phone the next year. It's only after digging through the archives online that we can get a broader sense of how this company used to operate and still seems to court controversy. It doesn't mean we immediately stop recommending Samsung products, but I think it matters who I do business with. I think it matters who I give my money to, and whether my money is contributing to business practices I might find objectionable. I think it's fair to ask a consumer to consider their spending like that. There's a certain whiff of hypocrisy to how Samsung operates that I don't appreciate. And it's a story that requires a little context and a little history. Samsung built momentum early in the company's life as a television manufacturer, but started facing tougher competition in the 80s and 90s. Japan was the hot tech center for consumer electronics, and Samsung at the time had a reputation for being a cheaper alternative. Not necessarily a good bargain, but a cheap, lesser-than alternative to companies like Sony. This is one of the first instances of a tactic Samsung would use throughout its rise, in colluding with other companies to fix prices on their products. Through the 90s and into the early 2000s, Samsung benefited and profited from price fixing on both CRT and LCD technologies. They would be caught on several instances of this behavior, but Samsung would often receive insufficient fines. Those fines would not impact the profitability of price-fixing components. Getting caught and getting fined for price-fixing TVs did not discourage Samsung from price-fixing other components. So we can casually surmise that the TV price-fixing fines did not teach the intended lesson to Samsung executives. In 1999, Samsung began price-fixing RAM, the memory used in computers and laptops, and was caught in 2005. In 2005, they were served a $300 million fine by the US government, and several executives went to jail. I think we'd all agree that's correct. But to put $300 million into perspective, in 2005, Samsung reported net profits of $7.5 billion on revenue around $79 billion. So, for price-fixing RAM for over 6 years, they were served a one-time fine that was roughly about 4% of their earnings for 1 year of business. And it was that fine that taught Samsung a lesson. They would never again engage in that style of collusion, until they totally did it again in 2018, price-fixing RAM again with Hynix and Micron. When fines are barely taxes on corporate profits, we can be pretty sure that these large organizations are going to continue doing the bad things if it makes them more money. My ire with Samsung often stems from how they directly treat their customers, especially with Samsung-branded products like TVs, phones, and tablets. But I think it's important to bring up the corporate corruption scandals here too. Every time you buy a Samsung device, part of that sale goes towards paying for the lawyers and the lawsuits needed to defend the company against these scandals. But on top of that, you also pay inflated prices because of these shenanigans in manufacturing and component pricing. If your phone is not a Samsung phone but has Samsung RAM and a Samsung screen, those parts cost more, in part, because of Samsung's other business practices and their lawsuits. all of the company's costs will get passed on to the consumer. These issues don't live in a vacuum. When we hear word of another scandal, I'm not inclined to give Samsung the benefit of the doubt, precisely because of the company's history of IP theft, market manipulation, bribery, collusion, and price fixing. My opinion will probably be less kind until we see evidence that exonerates them. I wholly admit that that's a personal bias, but it's a bias earned over decades of evidence. I believe these issues are systemic, and we've got data to suggest that it's not a series of one-off instances that were corrected for through regional regulations. I don't believe we're seeing the actions of a few bad apples at Samsung. I think their issues are broader. I think their issues are larger. As we get into more of these stories, I'll have links for all of these issues on the podcast descriptions on my personal sites, somegadgetguy.com and patreon.com/somegadgetguy. But let's abbreviate this by doing a little bit of a speed run of Samsung's more objectionable situations. From the 90s through the early 2000s, we have price fixing on CRTs and LCDs. In the late 90s, and again in 2018, we see price fixing on components on RAM. In 2006, Samsung stole intellectual property from Pioneer, and later settled after court costs had decimated Pioneer, who would go out of business in 2010. Samsung lost that court case but dragged out the case, accruing court costs to harm their opponent. In 2007, Samsung stole intellectual property from Sharp, and again fought them legally until the International Trade Commission sided with Sharp, and they would later settle that dispute after a prolonged legal fight with similarly expensive court costs. 2007 was a busy year for Samsung as they also fought a similar IP theft lawsuit from Kodak, mirroring similar court-delaying tactics. And in 2008, Samsung's lawyers were still racking up billable hours fending off a lawsuit from InterDigital over wireless technologies. This one's funny. As I was writing the script, Samsung just recently settled a renewed licensing agreement this year in arbitration related to that court case that was settled in 2014. For both Kodak and InterDigital, Samsung occupied court time and ran up legal fees until the bitter end, when the ITC ruled against Samsung on multiple IP theft cases. Samsung delaying tactics kept multiple companies in court for years, while Samsung's business continued to operate consistent IP theft schemes. We remember the years of legal wrangling and appeals brought during the Apple versus Samsung lawsuits. That was a really high-profile case in North America. But internationally, this is a common Samsung tactic. They've played this game against multiple companies. As a brief tangent, I'm not inclined to sympathize with Apple, but years later, I'm more inclined to side with some of Apple's arguments over that specific dispute. Apple would later play games with IP theft of their own, and no huge surprise, they are also really good at dragging out court cases and lobbying politicians to exhaust their opponents and detractors. But I digress, we should stick with Samsung. Apple versus Samsung was hot in 2012, but also in 2012, Samsung, LG, and Korean cell phone carriers were caught price-fixing phones. And when they can't work with a competitor to rig the market, Samsung also has a huge marketing department and engages in some rather distasteful propagandizing of their competitors. In 2013, Samsung was fined in Taiwan over astroturfing negative comments and faking negative reviews of HTC phones. HTC was an incredibly successful ODM, original device manufacturer. They would make products for other companies to put their labels on. XDA devices, AudioVox, even one generation of Palm phones were built by HTC. Sales of first-party labeled HTC products never compared to Samsung global sales. But with the launch of the HTC One series in 2012, the company was building a better reputation for making premier, expensive devices. Samsung marketing played dirty to try and tarnish the image of HTC's best phones. Of course, after that fine, Samsung would never again astroturf websites or reviews or social media ever again, until they were loosely caught setting up fake fan questions and AMAs on Reddit this year. AstroTurfing social media is probably pretty cheap and easy to do, and a company as large as Samsung spending as many marketing dollars around the internet as they are, it's unlikely Samsung will face any significant repercussions if they're caught AstroTurfing social media. Continuing on my brief tangent here, I also want to mention that an interesting thing happens in 2013. Elections in South Korea are hot, and a major topic is corporate corruption in Korean politics. At the time, numerous stories were breaking about illegal activities in the tech space, and the operation of companies like Samsung were often compared to the Hollywood depiction of mafia-style crime families. At the top of this hierarchy, Samsung is one of the largest and most dominant forces in the Korean economy. The left-wing candidate Moon Jae-in ran on a platform looking to put tougher regulations on Korea's business families. Another candidate, Park Geun-hye, also started her campaign on a similar business-busting platform, but she later cooled her opposition to business giants like Samsung. Park Geun-hye won that election and became president of South Korea. Why do I bring that up now? No reason. It's just a fun little factoid you should probably remember. Now, back to our Samsung timeline. In 2014, the EU fined Samsung for another chip cartel price-fixing scheme with Royal Philips and Infineon. To showcase how slowly regulation catches up to these tech companies, Samsung worked with other companies to fix prices on the chips used in SIM cards. These companies colluded from 2003 to 2005. Regulators began their investigation in 2008, and fines were issued in 2014. It took 11 years to discover, investigate, and fine Samsung for this transgression. Samsung eventually cooperated with regulators and supplied information on their partners in this collusion. Samsung's fines were reduced to roughly $47 million. Considering these chips are used in every phone SIM card, most bank cards, and sometimes even used in official documents like passports, we can imagine the economic impact of millions of these chips being sold at scale throughout Europe for several years under a price-fixing scheme. I feel I should take another brief pause here. Listing all these scandals out, one after the other, I worry that they might start to lose their impact. Each one of these issues caused significant harm to customers and tech sectors. It harmed competition while enriching Samsung's position in the market. Often Samsung received fines that were inadequate to correct for the abuse suffered from these business practices. Then, in 2016 and through 2017, the president of South Korea, Park Geun-hye, was impeached from office, arrested on corruption and bribery charges, and sentenced to 24 years in prison. In 2017, Lee Jae-yong, the heir of the Samsung family throne, was also sent to prison for bribing the president of South Korea. Lee was sentenced to 5 years, but was let out after 11 months. He was later sent back to prison in 2021 following the discovery of additional wrongdoings in the original bribery case and sentenced to another 2.5 years in prison, but only served 207 days of that additional sentence before getting released again. Following Young's reduced sentence, we heard word that Samsung is now going to invest $230 billion into the South Korean tech economy over the next 10 years. That's how crucial this company is to the Korean economy. As mentioned previously, in 2018, we see the second major legal action against Samsung price-fixing RAM with Hynix and Micron. And if you remember, RAM prices skyrocketing in 2016, this was the direct effect of market collusion. Buying or building a PC was more expensive than it should have been because of those brands manipulating the market. Also in 2018, Samsung is sued by France over labor conditions in Samsung factories. The saddest aspect of this story, the main crux of the legal action, came because of deceptive marketing. Samsung made a public pledge about corporate ethics, but later activists uncovered terrible working conditions and child labor violations. It's shocking to think France might not have brought this specific case if Samsung had simply not made any claims about ethics. Stated on Samsung's website, quote, "We respect the basic human rights of all people. Forced labor, wage exploitation, and child slavery are not allowed under any circumstances," end quote. Except they were allowing those violations to happen in their factories. They weren't living up to their own marketing claims about human rights. And one of the scariest additions to this list, an Indian report is published in 2019, covering Samsung's practice of colluding with local law enforcement in Chennai, in India, where Samsung investigated union activities, impersonated law enforcement, and mobilized the local law enforcement to disrupt organized labor movements. People publishing reports on this behavior were intimidated by Samsung and local authorities over months of pressure placed on pro-union organizations. In getting caught, local Samsung executives promised not to contact those groups again, but never offered an official apology or acknowledgement of the most grievous allegations levied against the company. Okay, we're catching up to 2021 when Lee is sent back to prison. Also in 2021, Lee is let back out of prison. But 2021 was another busy year for the Samsung legal team. In 2021, Samsung was tagged by Dutch authorities for, you guessed it, price-fixing consumer electronics. And after years of legal wrangling, Russian regulators banned the sale of 61 models of Galaxy phones for repeated intellectual property theft. In 2022, Samsung suffered a data breach, and in detailing the breach, consumers were concerned over the amount of personally identifying information that Samsung tracked on their customers. A class action suit was brought over that data collection policy, and Samsung pushed for arbitration. After pushing for arbitration, they just stopped paying their side of the legal fees, stalling and prolonging yet another court case, which just stacks higher and higher costs on their opposition. And that brings us to this year, 2023, when we mentioned before the astroturfing on Reddit. This year, we see a particularly galling technique arriving from Samsung here in the United States, where Samsung is likely going to be able to dismantle significant portions of right-to-repair initiatives for consumer electronics like phones and tablets. The company that has regularly transgressed IP law for their own benefit is hiding behind IP law to prevent repair parts from entering the country. It's unlikely that we'll see any significant opposition to Samsung's play here. I doubt anyone can build a large enough war chest of money to fight Samsung for years in a prolonged court battle. If Samsung gets their way, it will make repairing an older phone significantly more expensive than buying a newer phone. I have a link to a great Hugh Jeffries video on that topic that helps explain the situation in better detail. The TLDR, Samsung is kind of a hypocrite about IP theft, IMO, I am not a lawyer. We can hand wave away corporate shenanigans and try to act like these moves are somehow universal, the all companies bad argument. But what we see is a consistent series of tactics that harm competition and enrich Samsung's position in the global market. Few companies can operate at the same scale as Samsung, so even if other companies do the same bad things, few companies can cause the same amount of damage per instance of each bad thing. I believe our criticisms of Samsung should be an order of magnitude higher based on the potential harm Samsung can cause. My bias is competition. It bothers me when we hand wave away decades of abuse because that harms competition. But even if we detach and overlook the corporate scandals, Samsung doesn't have a great track record of treating their customers well either. We see numerous instances of Samsung making bold claims and failing to live up to those claims, of hiding bad business practices and misrepresenting the features of their phones. It matters in advertising that commercials don't lie about the performance of a product, and that sets up consumers for unrealistic expectations and later disappointments. A common pivot for Samsung is to start playing Apple-like emotional games with their marketing, boasting nebulous feelings about owning their products instead of tangible performance metrics.
We don't have big award shows or huge budgets or fancy cameras, but what we do have are our phones and duct tape and parking lots and guts. And we have ideas we need to share. We know it's not the size of the production that matters, it's what you make. We don't create because we have to. We create because we love to. And we've captured billions of moments from different angles, for different reasons, for millions of viewers, but with one thing in common. When we're told that we can't, we all have the same answer. Watch me.
But even then, Samsung can goof pretty hard, and they often set up their most die-hard fans for disappointment. In 2013, the year Samsung was fined for astroturfing negative reviews about HTC, Samsung was also caught juicing their smartphone benchmark scores. The Galaxy Note 3 would turn on a special performance mode for benchmarks so that the phone could get better scores, and that tier of performance was never made available to consumers. Taiwan also fined Samsung for lying about features on the Galaxy Y, Samsung listing camera features that just did not exist on the phone. A comparable example of misrepresenting phone performance: in 2017, Apple finally admitted that they were throttling the performance of older phones over software updates, which, in my opinion, is still one of the most egregious anti-consumer situations I believe we've seen in the modern era of electronics and computing. Faking performance issues, putting in inadequately sized batteries for the expected life of the device, and hampering performance over software right around the time that consumers might be looking at a phone upgrade, near the end of a 2-year contract. I think that's grotesque, introducing pain points that encourage consumers to buy earlier than they might have otherwise needed to, and also creating unnecessary e-waste out of products that should have lasted longer. This practice went on for years, Apple degrading performance of consumer devices with no disclosure of this practice to those very consumers. The people most hurt by Apple's business practices were the biggest and the most diehard Apple fans. Well, in 2018, Italy investigated and fined Samsung for a similar business practice, finding evidence of later updates hampering smartphone performance. I think that's a bad one, especially following the Note 7 debacle of phones exploding. Samsung battery issues deserved a lot more scrutiny. I'm still not sure why this issue wasn't more broadly investigated, and we witness echoes of these battery issues today. The concerns of an old Samsung phone battery puffing in a drawer if you haven't used it recently. Please do me a favor and pause this podcast now if you have an old Samsung phone tucked away in a shoebox somewhere. That very well could be a fire hazard. Hey, podcast listeners. I work really hard to find mutually beneficial ways to support production on my various distribution platforms. Instead of just running ads on this podcast and hoping they don't annoy you, I want to find products or services that you really will get something out of and that can help fund my production. While I do talk about some of those items in ads throughout this podcast, I've never created one easy-to-view master list of my current partnerships until now. Sorry, I couldn't help myself. If you'd like to help contribute, support production of this podcast and my various videos and reviews, head on over to somegadgetguy.com. At the top, there's going to be a link for Support Some Gadget Guy, and you can see what my current partnerships are. At the time this podcast was recorded, in addition to my Patreon, we can hook you up with a $10 voucher for shopping a new OnePlus, save 20% on some One More headphones, sign you up for Google Fi service, Amazon affiliate links, Audible, or you can grab a Mega Pickle coffee mug of your very own. Savory, delicious Mega Pickles. Head on over to SomeGadgetGuy.com, support banner on the top right-hand side of my website, and hopefully you find something cool, something you like, while also kicking me a little extra scratch. Did you take care of that phone? Welcome back to the podcast. In 2019, Australian regulators fined Samsung over misleading ads focusing on device durability and water resistance. Samsung also heavily markets security, but in 2020 we saw a combination of issues on Galaxy phones. Legislation in California mandated that companies had to disclose consumer data sales, and Samsung Pay was selling off user purchasing information. That same year, we also saw a strange issue with Samsung storage management sending some personal data to the servers of a Chinese company known for making some malicious data tracking apps. When pressed to comment on the situation, a non-answer was delivered via PR. Some of your data could be going to this company. It was a service designed to help optimize storage and deletion of data, and it was never clearly detailed what information the service had access to. A future update to the Samsung Device Care Suite would simply remove mention of the Chinese company, so I guess that totally fixed everything. No mention, no harm, no foul. This was also the same year that Samsung complied with Russian authorities to pre-install government-approved apps on Galaxy phones sold in Russia. This was a year before Russia banned dozens of models of Samsung phones for IP theft. Samsung was also caught manipulating benchmarks on their solid-state drives, sending faster drives to reviewers than were being sold to consumers. Juicing benchmarks is another one of those common issues we see from the brand. They got caught on the Note 3. And then they learned their lesson, and they totally never did anything like that ever again. Until they totally did it again on the Galaxy S10, Galaxy S20, S21, and the S22 series of phones. Samsung's Game Optimization Service was a delicious little slice of Orwellian doublespeak. It allowed the phone to operate at full speed for benchmarks, but throttled over 10,000 apps to try and improve battery life. Which is hilarious because the S22 era of phones was known for having really poor battery life. So Samsung's practical performance, practical output, compared against their marketing, was kind of a lie. Investigating the breadth of the scandal, Geekbench, a popular app used to rate phone performance, delisted 4 years of Samsung phones from their performance archives dating back to the Galaxy S10. Samsung had been cheating benchmarks for 4 years, overpromising and underdelivering the real-world performance of their devices. Samsung wasn't done in 2022, though. They were also caught cheating TV benchmarks, localizing more accurate color to a small section of the screen that reviewers would calibrate and test, but then juicing the saturation of the rest of the display, claiming better accuracy, but also lying about that accuracy. We're halfway through 2023, and Samsung has already gotten caught up in some small controversies regarding advertised storage on their phones and faking moon photos with AI. Samsung's problem there, they hid a fake AI processing feature in the main auto mode of their camera app. It doesn't tell the user that it's an enhanced, faked photo. And Samsung spent a lot of money marketing Moon Zoom before the launch of the S23. With no disclosure from the app, consumers are led to believe that they're really optically getting photo data of the moon. Before updates, you could point a Samsung camera at a blurry circle on a computer monitor, and the phone would paint in moon information that never really existed. When a company like Vivo has a super moon mode, it's a separate mode on the camera, and the first time you fire it up, it tells you it's AI enhancement, and it shows you the before and after photos of how it's faking that data. I believe those disclosures matter. Samsung lied and misrepresented the performance of their camera. There is no wiggle room there. There is no whataboutism that justifies this deception when we can see clear examples of alternatives doing it right. But for this feature, it also sets up Samsung consumers for disappointment. A Galaxy phone owner can get this surprisingly sharp photo of the moon, which I hear is pretty far away. But then they can't get as good or as clear a photo of something that's across the street. Samsung's marketing manages to be ridiculous, and at the same time, set up disappointment for Samsung consumers. It's kind of maddening, but the people most hurt by Samsung's marketing are Samsung's most die-hard fans and consumers. Whew! To take a quick break from this huge list of offenses and just kind of settle down for a minute, a lot of people are probably bristling right now, more than a few folks getting defensive or just tapping out of this podcast. Story after story after story, it must be mentally exhausting, constantly jumping through hoops to either claim one issue is a non-issue or it's not as bad because other companies do bad things, whataboutisms, or trying to discredit some small aspect of the consumer harm, ignoring it all and just falling back on tired old tropes like accusing me of bias or objecting to my tone. I mean, I'm just a hater. I don't have any reasons to be this mean. Clutch my pearls. But that's often why my tone is so antagonistic. I'm not making this all up. I have every story I talk about here listed in the show notes for this podcast. And I believe it should matter to us who we do business with, who we give our money to. I do not expect all the daily driver consumers out there to be aware of these corporate scandals. If folks are aware of Samsung as a brand, it's because of the billions of dollars Samsung spends every year marketing their company. However, if someone claims to be a tech enthusiast, I have a higher expectation of that person being a little more tapped in. Enthusiasts should be more aware of the behind-the-scenes issues of these manufacturers. This, for me, is a critical difference between a fan of technology and a fan of a brand. None of these moves from Samsung were good for the overall tech scene. They only served to unfairly enrich Samsung's position at the expense of competition, and I believe that's bad for consumers. I feel Samsung's current position in the market is partly gained through some business practices we should all find a little distasteful, and through a ton of marketing. I don't believe Samsung has earned their position as a de facto market leader or a de facto option in Android land as much as they've bought it and cheated competition to get it. Speaking of that marketing, their commercials are a little insidious too. Part 2. Samsung is kind of a bully. Beyond the instances where Samsung outright lied, misrepresented their products, or just focused on absurdly silly emotional benchmarks, there was a consistent trend of bullying in their advertisements. We got to go back a little bit on this one. Some of what Samsung does today, they can't even claim as original Samsung ideas. Years and years ago in the personal computer space, Apple found some success in messaging by confronting the much larger IBM-compatible PC market and positioning Macs as hip alternatives to stodgy corporate IBM devices. From the original 1984 Super Bowl ad through several generations of Macs, and most blatantly with the classic Mac versus PC commercials, literally characterizing the two platforms as two very different comedic actors.
Hello, I'm a Mac.
And I'm a PC.
Zuntite, you okay?
No, I'm not okay. I have that virus that's going around.
Oh, yeah.
In fact, you better stay back. This one's a doozy.
That's okay. I'll be fine.
No. Do not be a hero. Last year, there were 114,000 known viruses for PCs.
PCs? Not Macs. So, you just grab this
one. I think I got a crash.
Hey, if you feel like that'll help, good.
It's about the snarkiest that Apple ever categorized their competition. Today, Apple is far more keen on a lies of omission strategy to misrepresent the performance of their competitors. But again, we'll save more in-depth Apple discussion for a future long-form podcast essay. Years into the Mac versus PC campaign, the PC character started gaining sympathy with viewers, and Apple stopped producing that series of ads. Well, Samsung gained some traction with commercials comparing Galaxy phones to iPhones. My personal favorite era of Samsung advertising was around the Galaxy S3 and the S4, where Samsung ads highlighted all of the features that Galaxy phones had that iPhones did not. It was a wild era of phone manufacturing where Samsung was desperate to shake the image of being a copycat brand, and they poured a lot of investment into moonshot features for their devices. No, not moonshots like fake AI moon zoom, just experimental features that didn't always quite stick the landing. Those experiments wouldn't always last from phone generation to phone generation, but it made the premium Android space a lot more interesting. It was fun winking at consumers. You could expand storage, swap batteries, plug in nice headphones on a headphone jack. There were alternate air gestures, and we had a mix of fingerprint and face unlock features, different kinds of camera tech, stylus support, multitasking, using your phone as a universal remote. The Android scene was a lot more vibrant, and Samsung in that era really played to the strengths of having an alternative to the streamlined iPhone. Those ads where a Galaxy owner would show up at a pool party and show off some wacky features and water resistance, those were fun and vibrant commercials to highlight the many differences between Galaxies and iPhones.
Yeah, yeah, yeah,
bring it,
please.
In. Bring it in.
Okay. Oh, got it. Thank you.
Thanks, buddy.
You want it?
Yeah.
Oh, wow. Here, I want to share. Can I share too?
No, yours doesn't do that.
So some smartphones are smarter than other smartphones.
Exactly.
What are we doing with these phones?
Though Samsung didn't stop there. The success of those early us versus them ads evolved into advertisements making fun of the lines of consumers who would camp out for new iPhones. Making fun of wall huggers who couldn't swap a battery quickly to recharge a device. Samsung wasn't just making fun of Apple, the company, but also Apple customers, and often in really mean-spirited ways, eventually arriving at the surreal Samsung commercials of strawman iPhone owners carving notches into their hairlines. Worse still, Samsung also took stabs at Apple employees, showcasing them as bumbling sheep just regurgitating Apple marketing and incapable of original thought.
What's that then?
Oh, that's the Apple Pencil.
So what's the difference between that and the one that comes with the Galaxy Note 9?
Well, the Apple Pencil only works on the iPad.
Okay, so what can I use on my phone?
Your finger?
Oh, yeah. Oh, because yeah. You don't have one. Oh, okay.
No, I have finger. I have all 10 of my fingers.
We might try to dismiss the impacts of marketing, but with each major spot produced by Samsung, we also saw articles interviewing Apple Store employees where people were motivated to schedule Genius Bar appointments to try and embarrass Apple employees like they saw in those Samsung commercials. We have a word for that kind of behavior. Someone who does that is a bully. Samsung marketing, ratcheting up the divisive tone, belittling a competitor's brand, that brand's customers, and that brand's employees, those ads appealed to a special flavor of consumer electronics bully. The kind of Samsung knight that dishes it out when they feel they have the numbers on their side and absolutely cannot handle it when their preferred bully brand faces any criticism or scrutiny. Samsung knights are the most aggressive at pooping all over other products and are the fastest snowflakes to melt when you show them how Samsung really isn't getting it done these days. Following the Note 7 exploding, Samsung poured a ton of money into marketing. For several years, Samsung spent the most on advertising across all media and was either the top ad spender or would fall to second place behind all of the collected brands of Procter & Gamble. I'll include a picture of all the sub-brands of Procter & Gamble in this podcast's show notes. Procter & Gamble currently includes 19 sub-brands that each earn over $1 billion a year, and a number of other smaller labels in home and consumer goods categories. Samsung was spending as much or more on advertising than all of these labels put together. Those were the years we saw the best economic recovery and growth for Galaxy S phones, peaking with the Galaxy S10. As Samsung scaled back their ad buys, they still spend billions marketing their company every year, but when they were no longer the top ad buyer in the world, we saw that correlate with a drop in sales. Samsung picked up millions of premium tier customers, but they couldn't hold on to them. From the Galaxy S10 to the S21, two successive generations of phones, Samsung premium priced phone sales plunged by over 40%. The S22 series did not recover any significant ground, and the S23 seems to be holding steady in its first two quarters of availability. The vast majority of Samsung phone sales exist below $400. It's estimated that Samsung sold roughly 260 million phones in 2022, and that's after missing sales goals and expectations. But only about 10% of those phones were Galaxy S and Galaxy Z, the most expensive phones that Samsung manufactures. That's five different premium models of expensive phones, all combined. Those five S and Z phones sold fewer units than a single model of iPhone 13 and the non-pro version of the iPhone 13. Samsung is claiming to be a market leader, and they regularly focus their advertising on the most expensive devices that they offer, but they aren't inspiring growth in that premium market. They're coasting on mid-ranger and entry-level sales, and they're practically invisible to consumers under the age of 30. Even in South Korea, on Samsung's home turf, we saw the threat of a class action lawsuit over the performance of the S22, and Apple had the biggest gains in local, premium phone sales, where Samsung slipped pretty hard on phone sales above $400. In 2023, it's estimated the average selling price of an iPhone is almost $1,000. The average selling price of a Samsung is less than half of that. Samsung's current strategy isn't getting it done, and that matters when we see them embroiled in so many scandals. The devices themselves aren't selling through merit. Hyped up promises and overvalued trade-in deals help inflate sales numbers, but more consumers bleed off every year. Samsung's success in cornering the North American carrier market doesn't feel like healthy, earned competition. I won't spend as much time on the nuances of Samsung's other business divisions. I'm probably not qualified to really dig into the nitty-gritty, but we can also lay some blame on Samsung's semiconductor business and chip foundry for harming the performance of all Android phones over the last 2 years. Companies like Qualcomm and MediaTek, those companies design a chip, and then they send those designs to a foundry to mass produce those chips, the chips that go in our phones and tablets. The two major foundries for mobile electronics are Samsung and TSMC. When we saw reports of poor performance, poor battery life, and phones that could run so warm they were uncomfortable to hold, those chips came from Samsung's foundry. In 2022, Qualcomm shifted production back to TSMC, and we saw one of the most radical turnarounds in performance and battery life I think I've ever personally witnessed in my years of reviewing consumer gadgets. When Samsung is not properly scrutinized for their issues, it harms entire industries of electronics. Recording voiceover, spoken word, is truly one of my favorite activities. My second favorite hobby is photography. If you've been looking to improve your mobile photog skills, if you want to produce more professional content, or you're just looking to take your family photos to the next level, I wrote a book to help you out with that. Take Better Photos, Smartphone Photography for Noobs, is available on Amazon Kindle. Walking through the basic terminology of photography, covering the settings on your camera, discussing composition and inspiration, and I even include a long list of exercises and challenges to really hone your skills, all with some helpful example photos and diagrams. Search for Take Better Photos, Smartphone Photography for Noobs on Amazon to grab your copy today. Shifting Gears, Part 3, My Personal Experiences with Samsung Public Relations. If you've made it this far, I'm impressed. Congratulations. You're probably getting a feeling that I wasn't closely following all of these events while they were happening, and you'd be right. I was often one of the knights trying to put these transgressions in perspective, or I'd highlight similar transgressions from other brands to muddy the waters of a conversation, or I'd just ignore whatever was convenient to ignore. Samsung videos were popular. I got a lot of views on those videos. Those views helped subsidize my reviews of other products. I was doing fine. As my relationship with the brand started to change, I spent more time revisiting these older issues and examining the company's history. And I really didn't like what I saw. I didn't like what I was a part of. These issues felt consistently different than many of the other individual problems associated with smaller manufacturers. This self-reflection made me a little more accepting of competing devices. I started getting more interested in HTC, then LG, and Nokia, especially during the Windows Phone era. I returned to Sony and Motorola. It was refreshing to see how different devices could offer different experiences to specific consumers. And I quickly stopped believing in winners and losers. And I really started to appreciate tech reviews from reviewers that focused on a right tool for the right job for the right customer style of conversation. Tech is so much more fun when we don't treat reviews as a buy or don't buy binary decision for some lazy idea of an almost illiterate average consumer. But my opinion on Samsung soured further when I started interacting directly with Samsung PR, because that's when stuff got personal. I've been on the internet for a while now. Early on in the life of my YouTube channel, I had built up a decent relationship with carrier and accessory PR teams. Through those years, up to around the Galaxy Note 5, I would get positive replies from Samsung, but there was no traction on working with them directly. Lots of encouragement and thanks for the video replies, ultimately ending with, "We'll put you on the list," kinds of emails that, you know, those mean they're just going to ignore you, but they're being kind about it. Around the Galaxy Note 5, I started talking to the team at Pocket Now, and they were interested in bringing me on. Michael Fisher was going to step down. They wanted a reviewer in place for that transition. I had years of consistent reviews on camera and audio tech. I was just getting ready to publish my book, Take Better Photos, Smartphone Photography for Noobs, on Amazon Kindle. Another shameless plug, I just updated that book fresh for 2023. I was hosting my own little podcast. Pocket Now had a podcast. I think we were both excited about this partnership. After joining the team, I quickly discovered that Pocket Now had a somewhat poor relationship with Samsung PR. It's not really my place to detail all the specifics of what happened before I was on the team, but Samsung had put Pocket Now on their naughty list. Pocket Now reporters would get invited to events, but they were a little more punitive in preventing Pocket Now from getting early review devices. If you're aware, if you know anything about this business, the most lucrative time frame for gadget reviews is when search interest is at its highest, just before the product is actually shipping to consumers. Now, you don't get money from Samsung directly, but getting special early access is a huge financial motivation to stay on Samsung's good reviewer list. I'd kindly point you to another similar conversation from John Redinger. He posted recently about being blacklisted by Apple, and I'll link that video in the notes on this podcast too.
So the story that I want to share is how I got blacklisted from Apple PR. This happened back in 2018. So it's been about 4 years since all of this went down. I've insinuated and I've shared it privately, even told a story on a podcast or two, but I've never sat down and actually said what happened, why it happened, and how it actually turned out in the long run to be a good thing, although it took 4 years for me to see that it was a good thing.
It doesn't matter that Redinger is a diehard fan of Apple products. He wasn't the right kind of fan, and Apple aggressively demanded concessions and video removals from him on products that he purchased with his own money. That video of his is a singular, shining example of how manipulative Apple and Samsung can be with their press relationships. These PR teams can be extremely punitive, and it takes a ton of effort to get back on a good list if these huge brands feel slighted in any way. It's a really difficult line to walk, keeping the big brands happy, but also maintaining any consistency in your editorial process. At PocketNow, I know we absolutely failed at times, where we would pan one company for a perceived issue that later we would somewhat soften the criticism on a bigger company's product. All I can say to that is we're human. And no human is perfectly objective. I think we walked that line well, knowing we weren't as good as we always could have been. We see examples of this frequently in tech commentary. LG gets a do not buy recommendation for using adhesive on their batteries. That makes repairs more difficult. Later, Samsung does the same thing, and it's not treated as a big deal when Samsung does it. Or a OnePlus can be damaged by purposely flexing it aggressively while trying to break it, but when iPhones and iPads suffer similar issues, the recommendation is more commonly to be careful and buy a better case. Wasted bezel space is bad on an HTC. Bezels on a OnePlus tablet are too small, but those smaller bezels are too big on a Pixel foldable. It seems tech commentators are constantly moving the goalposts to promote the companies that are already the most popular at the expense of smaller labels and smaller manufacturers. But especially drilling down to Apple and Samsung, that early access is special because the brand is not paying you to talk about that product during the embargo period. But the brand knows they have a significant financial leverage they can exercise through access to their products. If you don't play ball, you don't get access. They can help you make a lot of money, or they can hurt you financially. So Samsung PR was delaying PocketNow coverage, and it quickly became a part of my job to kiss the Samsung ring. We did everything we could to try and rebuild that relationship with Samsung to the limits of what I would still consider ethical. We diligently showed up to every event. We carefully considered our coverage, our reviews, our conclusions to reviews. We would learn when product embargoes would lift for other reviewers so we could be cautious with our own coverage. And we showed Samsung we were willing to play ball. But if clicks are money, and we were trying to pay for a team of producers that would travel to events, that was an unsustainable position to be in. We would show up at a Samsung Unpacked event and have to shoot a ton of coverage at the event while other sites similar to our size were publishing their pre-brief and embargoed content. When we did get invited to a pre-brief, other outlets were getting early embargo access and were working with those devices in their homes. Then, after launch, as interest in the phone starts dropping, we'd tap other opportunities to score review devices or sometimes just eat the costs on what was a somewhat small gadget review purchasing budget. Samsung occupied a larger percentage of our efforts than other products. It took about 2 years of constant Samsung appeasement to strike up better conversations with the PR team. I'm grossly oversimplifying the highs and lows and the relationships involved, as I feel this is more of a Pocket Now story to this point than my personal story, and I don't feel I have the right to completely disclose everything that happened. It was complicated, it was emotional, and it was messy. On the Pocket Now team, we later stumbled into an opportunity to go hands-on early with a phone, and that allowed us a little leverage in the conversation. Samsung wasn't playing with us directly, so we weren't beholden to their embargoes. We could have published content early if we wanted. We could have beaten every other outlet to that review. Instead, one of our editors took the opportunity to reach out one last time and show we were willing to play ball, and that seemed to calm the remaining bad blood. We had worked so hard to show good faith and good work, but the thing that pushed us over the edge was having some leverage. Samsung didn't want to sour its relationships with other creators who were agreeing to their embargoes, and having us beat them to the punch would have hurt their partners' views. Pocket Now was in better shape. That relationship with Samsung had been reinforced, but it was around that time I was looking to leave Pocket Now. I don't think I ever really fit there. I don't think I really vibed with their audience, and the site was going in a direction that I didn't think I could contribute to. That's no shade on the Pocket Now team. I still hold all of those guys that I worked with in very high regard, in high esteem, and I think they do great work. They each legit hustle like crazy, and I was really proud of the work we did when I was down in the trenches with all of them. When I say I disagreed with the direction the site might have gone, I really mean just that. It was a disagreement, and I knew I was the wrong guy for that mission. I quietly left so as not to rock the boat or make them look any less capable. It was my decision to not make a big goodbye post or video. I really wanted them to look good and take that opportunity to streamline on their own terms. I didn't want to be the source of drama. I always feel tech conversations die when we stop talking about the tech and we start focusing on the interpersonal drama of different reviewers. I don't talk about that a lot because it's hard to get all the nuance right and not inadvertently or accidentally start some mess where people think I'm bad-mouthing them. And if you haven't been working at that level in producing content, it's difficult to describe how emotional these moves can be. Years later, I can still get a little choked up about some of these transitions, and it's very easy to mess that up talking about it publicly. I mean, there are so many days I really miss being a part of that team, and being a solo reviewer can sometimes be really lonely. Leaving Pocket Now, I was starting up a relationship with Newegg, looking to produce and host for their YouTube channel, starting a whole new series of videos and live streams. Newegg was heavily focused on gaming and PC building, and that left me free to cover mobile on my personal channel again. I reached out to brands that I covered while working with Pocket Now. It was slow going, reviving my personal channel, but I got back into the swing of producing by myself, and I got some positive responses from a handful of companies. It was fun going solo again. I reached out to Samsung and was immediately met with the positive affirmations and the "we'll put you on that list" kinds of replies. We know they're just going to ignore me, and I was really familiar with that from before working at Pocket Now. I was a bit more disappointed after working so hard to rebuild those bridges, but not terribly surprised after interacting with their PR. I was also doing some local TV news tech spots, fun little tips and tricks segments, quick consumer reviews for the local Fox affiliate. For the Note 10 launch, Samsung got really excited about us doing a segment on the popular morning block in LA. I had to crib all of Samsung's talking points the day after Unpacked. A Samsung rep showed up that morning to hand me the phone. I did a short on-air segment, and then I hosted a 20-minute live stream on the Fox affiliate Facebook page, and I was just winging it. All the reasons the phone was so cool, and just a powerful productivity option. And after that, the phone went back in a briefcase, and the rep flew back to New York.
I'm Juan Carlos Bagnell. I'm some gadget guy around the internet. I also host a show on Newegg, shameless plug. And so already, immediately, we're looking at a shift in strategy where I think a lot of people gravitated towards the Note initially because it was the only big screen option in town. If we're talking about the story of Samsung, they were ahead of the curve there. I remember when I held the Note 1 for the very first time, people were mocking it ruthlessly for being way too big. So the Note now represents a shift in strategy where it's not just about having the biggest screen, the biggest multimedia device that you can. It's about trying to focus a specific set of features and a specific set of hardware for business-grade mobility, productivity use. And I think they're making a pretty good argument for those of you who travel and maybe want to leave your laptop at home, maybe don't want to have to worry about landing somewhere and having a desktop to get your work done from.
Samsung got a nice little commercial plug in a big TV market. I think that helped Samsung's relationship with the TV station. But following up on that personally, it was still the same situation for me. If I could approach Samsung with an opportunity to deliver them free television publicity, they were sweetness and light and ready to play. They were happy for me to hold the phone for a couple minutes if I was going to say nice things about it in front of hundreds of thousands or millions of viewers. But any other opportunities to actually review a product or cover an event or invites to a pre-brief, well, they'd let me know. They'd put me on the list. But through that time, from the Galaxy S9 to the S20, I just wasn't missing any of their products. Where I used to live my life out of phones like the Galaxy Note, I was really happy playing with all these other solutions, all these other brands, all these other vibrant options in the mobile space. I mean, it's sad to think that the last couple years before the launch of 5G were maybe the high point of smartphone competition. In a way, stepping outside the Samsung bubble was one of the better things that could have happened just for my own personal fun factor. I'm certainly not making as much money as people who get early access to Samsung gadgets, but it bolstered my love for competition. It's the best feeling in the world when you really land the perfect fit gadget for someone's needs. And I think it's funny when someone really thinks about what they want and what they need out of a phone or a tablet, and if they're willing to take one step outside what they're most familiar with, it's not a foregone conclusion they'll pick from the two most popular brands. There is still a little fun left in gadget land, even for all the people who act like the market is locked up and the game is over. And talking about those people brings us to part four, Samsung fans versus Samsung knights. It's important. It's critical for me to reiterate. There's an ocean of difference between Samsung fans and Samsung knights. I've been talking for a while now. This podcast is really long, and it's highly critical of Samsung. I think it's fair that people might regard each of these criticisms with differing levels of severity. Some of these issues cause more harm than others. And point by point by point, I'm sure we all disagree on individual transgressions and how much harm each might have caused. But I don't particularly care about debating individual points. I feel that's missing the forest for the trees. The overall corporate behavior is more concerning to me. I'm looking at trends, especially coming from a company that isn't generating the kind of competition they claim to be. Samsung is not landing the great end that justifies some of these bad means. I think it's a waste of time to debate the merits of each individual transgression. If someone even made it this far through my ridiculous diary entry here, there's a person out there who enjoys Samsung products, but can rationally and critically look at years of behavior from this company and accept that it's worth criticizing the brand. The person who thinks it's good to hold Samsung accountable for their actions, and they might even be open to the idea of considering an investigation into the possibility of examining another product or service from a competitor. I think it's exceptionally lazy to look at Samsung and say, but other companies do bad things too. Because the scale of wrongdoing matters as much as the transgression committed. Taking one particular point, benchmark rigging and performance throttling. OnePlus was caught rigging performance on the OnePlus 9 in 2021. See? There you go. OnePlus does bad things. We can point to OnePlus and casually wave away criticisms of Samsung when they were later found to be doing similar performance modifications. Everybody does it, no big deal. But when it was just OnePlus, we rightfully pointed that out as a consumer harm. They were misrepresenting the performance of their product, and consumers did not get what OnePlus promised them. I did online news interviews during previous benchmark scandals. It's always a very serious topic when smaller companies get caught.
Hi everyone, welcome back to Between Bells. Smartphone manufacturers want you to think that your smartphone is faster than it really is by cheating something called benchmark stats. Juan Carlos Bagnell is a senior editor at Pocket Now. He's here to explain what that means for you and your data. How are you?
I'm doing well. Thanks for having me.
I was combining my hi and how are you all at once.
Hi, how are you?
I do that all the time. I totally
trying
get
to be,
it.
Trying to be efficient here. Okay, Juan, so what are the benchmark stats that these companies are cheating on?
Well, we all want to think that whenever we buy a new phone, especially some premium handset, that we're getting a powerful, new, exciting device. I think companies, it's a vested interest in making sure their products look as exciting as possible. My favorite trick is Apple's, where they'll put up a big bar graph and the new iPhone is 700 times more powerful than the very first iPhone we ever put out.
And often, while criticizing OnePlus, techies would hold up Samsung's as the alternative. Why buy a OnePlus when they lie about performance? What OnePlus did was a consumer harm. There should be no argument about that. No arguments at all. It was a bad thing. Consumers should get what they pay for, and they should get what was advertised. But this also needs to go one step farther. If we're being consistent and honest in our critique, we need to acknowledge the scale of distribution for a consumer harm. OnePlus and Samsung are both guilty of the same benchmark rigging, right? Well, maybe not. How many phones were sold by each company? How many consumers were affected by this anti-consumer move? Can we quantify the scale of potential consumer harm? It's really difficult to get a handle on that. OnePlus sales numbers since the end of 2021 have been lumped in with Oppo's global distribution. But I think we can guess that Samsung sells significantly more devices than OnePlus. If they're both guilty of the exact same tactic on an individual device, the potential consumer harm is an order of magnitude larger from Samsung. Many more Samsung owners and Samsung fans will be affected by Samsung's transgressions. We want to equate the two situations because the function of the transgression is similar, but I disagree. I believe our response to those kinds of issues should scale with the potential for harm. We should absolutely be upset with OnePlus. We should be more upset with Samsung. If we had gotten more upset with Samsung during previous scandals, it might have dissuaded smaller manufacturers from attempting similar strategies later. When we give Samsung a pass or try to minimize the outrage of a bad move, it emboldens other brands to try and cheat the same way and just hope they don't get caught. We recently faced another concerning story about a modem vulnerability that could potentially allow attackers to access an Android phone. This is scary stuff, and this needs to be reported on as an actual consumer interest story. Several outlets focusing on the North American market highlighted this modem being used in Google Pixel smartphones. Headlines about Google telling users to stop using voice over LTE or to disable certain features on their phone. This is correct. We should warn consumers of potential threats. We know the headlines on those stories get a lot more attention and traffic than the actual body of the story. But in discussing those security issues, the vulnerability is not from Google hardware, but a Samsung modem. A part of the Samsung Exynos modem was responsible for this issue, and that included numerous other Samsung devices that also used a Samsung Exynos modem. It wasn't as much of a concern for Galaxy S22 owners in the United States and in South Korea, because those phones used Qualcomm chips with Qualcomm modems. But there was a phone sold in the United States with an Exynos, the Galaxy A53. I'd be willing to wager one whole dollar that Samsung sold more Galaxy A53 phones than Google sold Pixel phones with this modem issue. That's my guess. If you have market data to prove or disprove my hypothesis, please share some links down in the comments on this podcast post on somegadgetguy.com. While there, maybe also consider using an RSS reader or a podcast app to subscribe to this content away from YouTube. That helps a lot. The scale of potential harm in the United States is one thing, but then we have to consider the hundreds of millions of potential phones internationally that also could have been affected by this issue. The scale of potential harm is an order of magnitude different between those two companies. And that's one of the things that triggers me in these conversations. When I'm a fan of a brand, I have higher expectations for them. I hold them to a higher standard because I want more out of them. If Samsung is to be considered a market leader, if they're going to advertise themselves as the driving premium option in Android land, and reviewers are going to act like they are the default option in expensive Android phones, I believe we need to scrutinize their behavior more. We need to hold them to the standard they advertise for themselves. Because when they slip up, substantially more people can be hurt by their issues. When problems with Samsung go out to market, those problems are distributed at a scale that few other companies can approach. I don't always do a good job of drawing that line between Samsung fans and Samsung Knights. I want people to like the phones they buy, but I want them to really like the phones for what the phones actually do well, not what marketing hype they bought into, and certainly not just for being on a popular winning team, like it's some kind of fashion flex or you belong to the right club. Buying a phone to belong to a club might mean you're not getting the actual best pocket computer for your needs. And I can't make a fashion flex video. I don't comment on purses or makeup. I rarely review phone cases. I just can't speak that language. You're listening to someone who enjoys the practicality of cargo shorts. So a Samsung fan can still come to a rational purchasing decision on owning a Samsung phone, but they could also appreciate why that brand should be scrutinized or criticized. Conversely, the person who can make it through all of this data and can look at the rampant manipulation of news feeds and social media and still completely bury their heads in the sand, completely disregard all of this data, all of this reporting, and they just run to the comments to complain about my tone because I'm a hater and bias, well, that person's a Samsung Knight. That individual is likely a lost cause. They might be irritating or dismissive. They might be aggressive and rush directly to homophobic and misogynistic insults or slurs. And occasionally they've risen to the level of death threats. I don't think Samsung fans appreciate how wild the Samsung Knights can get. I am a fan of Samsung, and I don't do any of those things, a rational Samsung fan might say. And good. That's correct. That's the way you should be. I'm glad you're reasonable. And I enjoy really fun, snarky debates with many Samsung fans. But if that's who you really are, please do not assume everyone is as even-keeled as you are. If you can listen to the criticisms of a multi-billion dollar corporation who manufactured your phone and not scurry off to sling hate speech down in the comments or immediately question my integrity for sharing decades of links of consistent misdeeds from Samsung, then you are not a Samsung Knight. We can be pals, and we will often disagree, but you're also not who I'm making fun of in my videos. I don't like bullies, and Samsung Knights are snowflake bullies. I can't post anything critical of the company without Knights and bots scurrying around on Twitter calling me names and insulting me. Samsung marketing kind of depends on these hateful little trolls vomiting all over social media. Samsung PR depends on really disingenuous people playing devil's advocate in Reddit threads and exhausting those people who have valid concerns and criticisms. How often we see those interactions with a Samsung Knight? Oh, interesting. I've never heard of any issues with Samsung. Can you take time out of your day and collect all the links and spoon-feed them to me so I can waste your time and ignore those links and call you biased? Why won't you debate me? I guess I win again. It's a tired game, and it's hacky, and we've seen it all over the political discussion on social media, but trolls gotta troll, right? And as a brief reminder, I have collected all the links I could find on the topics mentioned in this podcast, and they'll be on my home site, somegadgetguy.com, or on my Patreon, patreon.com/somegadgetguy. And this is not comprehensive. This isn't everything Samsung has done that we should side-eye. This is just a collection of greatest hits. If you ever need it in a conversation with a Samsung Knight, just copy and paste. It's yours to do with as you please. Use it with my blessings. If you're really debating a Samsung Knight, none of this will change their mind or anything. They'll just ignore it. Samsung Knights suck like that. But you won't have to waste your own time collecting all the links, and you might just help influence someone who was following the thread of a fake online debate. Which is about where I think we can wrap this all up. I've been talking for a while now, and this is the longest editorial I think I've ever produced. If you've followed me for any length of time, none of this should have been a surprise. Little pieces have been incorporated in videos and podcasts that I've produced over years of tech commentary. Like I said, I used to take it for granted that people might have been familiar with a few of the chapters of my Book of Samsung Reviews, but I just can't really count on that nuance anymore, not on this current flavor of YouTube. Today, YouTube content is a lot more disposable than it used to be, and I should definitely not assume that people are following up on these discussions like they used to. Listing it all out there is exhausting, and this isn't what I want to spend my time talking about technology, talking about consumer electronics. I really want to be focusing more on all the fun stuff. But increasingly, a couple major big brands can suck all the air out of the room, and it leaves consumers with a very warped or lopsided view of actual tech innovation. Lots of people are missing the fun today because they're only paying attention to a couple brand labels out there. If you're a fan of tech and not a fan of a specific brand, I would hope you would find this situation frustrating. Because it is a little disappointing how this information about Samsung or about Apple often comes as a shock to more casual tech enthusiasts. Criticizing Samsung or Apple, you get a lot of quizzical looks or frowns. It's difficult to get the message out on a class action lawsuit or a scandal or a security threat when Samsung spends billions a year on marketing their image. Samsung can occupy all of that mind space with a number of ad buys. There's a significant number of people who benefit and profit from participating in Samsung coverage, and there's a whole hateful army of people who will just troll for free. But it's funny. I think it's really funny because in my brain, I still don't feel like I am a Samsung hater. I have spent so many years of my tech consumer and tech reviewer life absolutely adoring their products. I'm not participating in this criticism irrationally. I'm not doing this for no reason. I'm definitely not doing this cynically to somehow make more money, because I definitely don't make more money engaging in this kind of critique. But it's that YouTube comment I smash my face against my keyboard whenever someone says, "You're just a hater for no reason," because that's just patently untrue. I have a number of reasons to be this skeptical about such a large billion-dollar corporation. But more than that, the emotional side of how much fun I have with technology, there's still this little bug in the back of my brain that wishes Samsung could be the company they claim to be. From when I absolutely adored their devices and sang their praises, I want Samsung to be that brand again. I think it's really sad that we had some glory years with Samsung when they were most fighting the image of being an Apple copycat or an IP thief. They were making some of the most radically progressive products in the space, only later to see them slide back into making fun of Apple for something and then desperately copying that same move that Apple made. From removable batteries to headphone jacks to proprietary audio codecs for their Bluetooth earbuds, we should not be shocked that every time Samsung copies Apple, Apple seems to build more sales momentum on premium devices. Every single time Android manufacturers copy the iPhone, it just reinforces to consumers why they should buy the iPhone instead. Why not buy the original instead of the poor person cheap copycat Android device? Apple is way better about playing that psychological and emotional value game with their consumers. And once Apple gets their hooks in a new customer, it is very difficult to ever win them back. I want to hold Samsung to a higher standard, and I want to see them surpass that standard. And there were a couple years where I felt Samsung was capable of that. That was such a fun feeling. But I haven't had that feeling for a while now. All right, I'm really landing this plane now. Thank you so much for listening to this podcast. This is not a place I want to live. I want to have more fun talking about innovation and playing with a healthy landscape of new devices. The last reason I decided on making this a podcast, the only other way to goose the YouTube algorithm is to create drama and engage in outrage traffic, purposely going out of your way to misrepresent a product so that people get upset and try to correct you in the comments and try to shame you online. Well, all of that is engagement. And YouTube doesn't care if you're happy or frustrated or angry. They just want to see you spend more time on YouTube. I find that distasteful. I do not want to support an algorithm that exists, in part, to make people miserable to increase a viewer's time on that site. YouTube is playing the same games with your mental health as Facebook or Twitter. If you're angry and frustrated, you'll spend more time angrily consuming content on their platform. As a podcast, I could approach this topic on my own terms and distribute it in a way that more aligned with my personal values. Short story, incredibly long, I'm not going to live in this long-form essay space. But we might need to revisit this place from time to time. We're just not going to own property in drama land. I hope others appreciate the nuance of this conversation. I hope it's contributed to your opinion on the consumer electronics landscape. And if you're inclined to share it, I appreciate that. Also, rating and reviewing podcasts on different platforms, that helps a lot. As podcasts still aren't quite controlled by a singular platform that can sort our shows algorithmically. Podcasting is sort of the last bastion of a more open or free distribution method, and hopefully we don't see any one company ratchet them like our other social media sites. I'll reiterate from my videos that all the support recently has been fantastic. Those folks clicking on links and hitting my home site, somegadgetguy.com, those folks smashing bell icons, or the people joining the list of names scrolling at the ends of all my videos by joining my Patreon. And once again, that's patreon.com/somegadgetguy. These folks are genuinely the coolest collection of tech pals in the galaxy, nay, in the universe. So I hope you'll check them out. And you know where you can find me around the rest of the internet, at Some Gadget Guy around the web. I'm spending more time on the Mastodons. I'm sharing photos a bit more on Flickr. And my podcast is on Twitch for the time being. That might change soon too, given their recent change to their terms of service. And I'm on the Twitters and the Facebooks and the Instagrams a little less so these days. It's not too hard to find me around the web, so look me up. We can chat. Now, I'd like you to be safe. I hope that you'll take care of yourself so that you can continue taking care of others. And I'll catch you all on a future podcast. Thanks again for listening.